thank you for downloading or streaming today's episode of the PW Torch Livecast. In just a couple minutes, we'll get you to the show. But first, I want to let you know about our big $1 VIP sale. If you have not become a PW Torch VIP member, this is the best time of year to do it. We are running our $1 sale in association with it being SummerSlam month. We are creating a SummerSlam special section on the PW Torch VIP website that will feature links to our SummerSlam reports dating back to when the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter started in the late 1980s through this year's. We're also creating a collection of our post-SummerSlam pay-per-view roundtables dating back to the mid-2000s. The last dozen SummerSlams have been covered with post-pay-per-view roundtables since we launched the PW Torch VIP website in the mid-2000s, and you can subscribe to that feed on your smartphone and listen to what we had to say the night of SummerSlam for the last dozen years. And you can subscribe to it exclusively as a VIP member on your smartphone or in iTunes. Just like all VIP audio, you can subscribe on your iPhone, Android, or through iTunes, or stream it directly from our ad-free VIP website, which is mobile-friendly and desktop-friendly. You also get everything else that comes with the VIP membership: ad-free access to our website, exclusive articles, the new weekly Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter chronicling wrestling history in depth, the biggest stories, the biggest events, obscure house show results, TV reports, exclusive columns, cover stories, and so much more. 1,500 plus back issues dating back to the late 1980s. Also, in the month of July, we posted over 130 podcasts for our VIP members. The live casts are great. They're even better when the commercials are edited out. And that's a bonus for VIP members. The commercials are edited out of the PW Torch live casts, and they're available for your convenience on our VIP audio feed, in addition to VIP exclusive shows that only VIP members listen to. I host The Fix with Todd Martin midweek for about 2 hours, and the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show on weekends for about 2 hours. The two top wrestling analysts in the business are part of PW Torch VIP every week. I also record the Wade Keller Hotline every single day. I've recorded it every single day for 8 years. No days off. You wake up, and there it is, the Wade Keller Hotline with the latest breaking news, my answers to VIP member questions, and every Monday night and Tuesday night, a detailed rundown with my analysis of both Raw and SmackDown. So much more comes with the VIP membership. Get full details at pwtorch.com/govip. And the coupon code for our sale is livecast2017. No space, lowercase, livecast2017. Enter that in the promo code box on our mobile-friendly sign-up form, and you are in for $1 for one full month. Or you can take that $9 discount and apply it to a three-month or a one-year subscription. That means that a $99 subscription for 1 year gets dropped down to $90, which equates to paying just on average $7.50 a month for the next year. If you're a fan of our work here on the PW Torch Livecast and my new show, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast over at Podcast One, you will love the PW Torch VIP audio lineup. So go VIP for $1 or take $9 off a longer-term subscription. This offer expires soon. Don't miss out. pwtorch.com/govip. Enter promo code LiveCast2017. That's LiveCast2017. No space in there. LiveCast2017. We'd love to have you as a member. We'd love to earn your business for the long run. Find out what people love about their PW Torch VIP membership and get more of what you love in terms of pro wrestling podcasts brought to you by the team at Pro Wrestling Torch.
All right, guys, welcome back to the Deep Dive with Rich Fan. I am actually not doing a radio today. I'm actually here with a guest. Deep Dive presents, if you will. We're going to be chatting with Darius Lockhart of CWF Mid-Atlantic, PWX, and a host of other organizations. I know him because Bruce Mitchell showed me some of his matches and his Be a Revolutionary social media ad campaign was pretty awesome. So, Darius, thank you, first of all, for joining the show, and how are you so far today?
Oh, no, thank you for having me, and today's been pretty good. Today's actually pretty good, so yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And for those of you guys, I'm going to mention this at the end as well. You can reach Darius. How can they reach you on social media?
On social media, you can find me on Instagram at just Darius Lockhart. And on Twitter, you can find me at DLockPro. That's at DLockPro. So, yeah, those are two places you can find me easily.
Perfect. So I know typically, because I read online, you had two interviews, one in the UK, one through your hometown paper, the Carolinian.
Yeah, those are some of the more recent ones, but I have a few. Yes, sir.
Okay. And so since this is the deep dive, I'll just admit, as a wrestling fan and now a person that's working as a journalist for the Torch and doing this stuff with the radio and whatnot, I overthink things. So I probably went way too far into thinking things. So I apologize in advance.
Oh, no.
But I think really reading the Carolinian article, when you mentioned that the 12-year-old you would look at you now and have someone you could look up to, the first thing I thought of was I'm a big comics fan, and seeing Miles Morales, and I have a 5-year-old son, and seeing Riri Williams and all these characters in Marvel and even in DC of color, and how he can say, when I was a kid, I couldn't go on the playground and be Spider-Man because the first response would be, well, Spider-Man's white.
No, yeah.
Now it's like, oh, well, I have Miles Morales. I can be Spider-Man. So for you as a wrestler, can you speak a little bit about kind of the importance and the weight you put on yourself by knowing that you have this representation that you're throwing out there?
Well, yeah, I'm a huge advocate of representation, as like you said. I think I definitely dealt with some of the same things growing up. Of course, I was one of the kids who I was into Harry Potter, I was into Power Rangers, and I was always told I couldn't be the Red Ranger, I couldn't be Harry because I was black. I could be Dean Thomas, but I couldn't be, Ron or Harry. And so I definitely know how that feels. So it kind of resonated from a really personal place. It started from there. And I guess more than ever, I realized when I was coming up watching wrestling that every person that I liked or that really touched me, I didn't look like me. You know what I mean? I think I mentioned in the Carolinian. But they didn't look like me. So I took that as, kind of a sign to myself, like, we come in all color, shapes, and sizes. We are in all stereotypes. So I find that even though representation comes in a lot of, I guess, different ways, I try to hold myself accountable for my actions and stay true to me, but also, show people don't have to sell out. So I guess I kind of put a weight on myself, not to where it keeps me up at night, but I kind of wear like a badge of honor.
Okay.
If that makes sense. I hope I answered that question correctly.
No. I think so. And I think kind of to spin off of that, when you were talking about the sellout part, I think that's interesting because as you progress in your career, how much are you going to be adamant in keeping the soul of who the revolutionary is? Even if you have to make some flourishes, like I was reading in one of the interviews, you were a big fan of the Matt Hardy MVP match, and I'm only struck by MVP. There was a story he told in one of his podcasts where he was in developmental, and he did a promo where he talked about basically, if you think you can steal aspects of my personality and give them to other people on the roster, I'm still the same dude that robbed that cruise liner, and so.
Yeah.
That, like, he's still him. Like, he might be the balling guy. He might be doing the dance moves or whatever, but he's still MVP at the end of the day. How much of it is Darius, and how much of it is going to be something that you're okay with shifting a little bit as promotions may ask you that, if at all?
Well, to be honest with you, I'm really, I prepared myself going into it because I'd always, been watching tons of interviews and tried to learn and open myself up to all aspects of wrestling. So I kind of knew that eventually, someday someone might present you with the idea of just changing completely. Like, I'm in 5-10 years from now, I might not be the revolutionary. I might be something totally different. And I don't mind that. I think that that's the key to longevity, change and adapting and working on yourself. So I don't mind if I have to make a change. But what's most important to me is that kids, whether, you know, black or white or any kind of race, can see someone in themselves, you know, can kind of see themselves, you know what I mean? Particularly kids that do look like me. Just to see yourself represented on a stage, it does go a long way. So I guess what I'm kind of trying to say is I don't mind the change, but I think as long as it feels authentic, as long as I'm doing something that feels authentic and something that really resonates with people, and they see that I'm truly where I want to be, and I'm still, you know, free to a certain extent, I think that's the most important part. The fact that I'm doing what I want to do, and at all, is in itself a testimony to, you know, to the possibilities of what can happen. I think someone asked me the other day, they were like, you know, you're revolutionary. Well, what actually makes you revolutionary? And I told them, you know, my existence and my success in this business is revolutionary in itself. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I think my presence here and the fact that, you know, I continue to make a role for myself, that opens up a lot of lanes and a lot of doors that a lot of people are just now realizing are a possibility or haven't realized the possibility. You know what I mean? So I think my presence alone is somewhat sustainable enough, but I think the authenticity along with my presence really helps things out.
Okay. And now here's going to be my first question that shows I really pay too much attention to things, or maybe, you know, you might appreciate this.
No, that's your job, man.
Yeah. But for me, I was a big fan of MVP mm-hmm. when he was in WWE. And then when he went to New Japan, I was really enamored with the fact that he not only changed himself from the ground up, but even changed some of his finishers. Like, he went away mm-hmm. from the drive-by, and he started doing either Oyasumi or the irreversible crisis. And mm-hmm. so I was going to ask you, I've seen, thanks to the powers of YouTube and Bruce giving me like, hey, you have to watch this, and this. I think I've seen like 7 or 8 matches before you went to Europe and after, if I got the timeline right. And the first thing I was struck by is when you came back from Europe, in particular your match against Kincaid, I'd seen him a couple of times in Evolve. You used a lot of the old school British, like you guys did the stretch spot where that was really cool, and I really liked that. And I saw you were a lot more vicious, more violent. And so I saw the Shining Wizard. I saw the Rings of Saturn. The one gentleman when you were wrestling in West Virginia said the backdrop into the reverse Falcon Arrow, you call that Stay Woke?
Yeah.
And
I recently changed the title to that. I used to call it Stay Woke, but people, I guess, were mixing up the names. I guess didn't really stick. Mm-hmm. So I've decided to change it to the Asada Driver in tribute to Asada Shakur. So that's what I think I'm trying to go with. So I'm going to try to get that change. It's just a really recent change, but I think I'm going to try to get that throughout people. But
oh my God, that's exactly what I was going to ask you about. Because, and then you also do the BBB or Revolutionary Knees.
Yeah.
And I was going to ask you, do you have anything that's tied into revolutionaries? And that's exactly it. So what else do you do? What other moves would you like to have out there? Because, you know, you need, or, you know, there needs to be somebody that creates that wiki that has all this stuff to get it straight for guys. Because I think, you know, I think marketing matters. But same thing with, I mentioned to Bruce before I was setting up for this, the idea of the Kinshasa knee strike by Nakamura being mm-hmm. a cleaner version of doing Bomaye, which goes back to Ali Bomaye. And so I'm probably one of the few people that would care about stuff like that. So to placate my insanity, what do you bring to the table as far as your moves, and what should we be aware of as far as what they're called?
You and I are more alike than you realize. I'm not even judging you, because I'm the same way with move names. And believe it or not, because of the indie format, I don't get mm-hmm. to tell people the name of my moves, and they don't really care about the name of my moves as much. But maybe that'd be later on for TV. But I've named almost all of my moves and tied them to Revolutionary. So my finish, as you know, I guess it's kind of reverse Falcon Arrow, like you kind of called it, is the Asada Driver. I have a cradle hammerlock suplex that I do. Mm-hmm. I call that the Pantherplex. The lariat that I'm kind of known for, some people I guess recognize that I have a decent lariat. I've titled that a lariat to my nephew in tribute to James Baldwin. The leg sweep in the corner of the knee, or anytime I do a knee strike, I kind of just, it's different variations of what I call the Huey Knee Newton, and just small things like that. I get a kick out of it, and it helps me bring things home. The revolution, the B Revolutionary Stomps. I don't even have a title for that, really. I just call it the B Revolutionary Stomps. But any knee is the Huey E. Newton. And I'm trying to think of anything else in particular that that I've named. Other than that, I think basically we kind of just stick to regular movesets, regular move names. Yeah.
Okay. And that's funny because in my notes here, one of the things I want to get to in a minute is the idea of escapism with wrestling and how even doing something like this, you're pulling someone back into the quote-unquote real world, but you're actually giving them a flavor of what a person of color sees every day. There isn't a quote-unquote real world when you can't mention Asada right. or you can't mention Huey. And I put down, the more I watched you and the more I watched some of the like your highlight video and what you're trying to bring to the table, I wrote down, you're the Huey Freeman of wrestling. So the fact that you have your knees as the Huey Knee Newtons is very, like, that's awesome. Because I think it's the idea of pleasant lies versus unpleasant truths. So as a wrestler, how do you balance that without, you know, because I know at times you were a heel and you might have faces that were predominantly Caucasian. And in the South, how does that – have you had bad experiences? Has it been pretty good? What?
To be honest, it's been almost 100% positive. If someone has a problem with it, they never mentioned it to me. I find that a lot of fans who – you know, a lot of Caucasian fans do actually – they resonate. It resonates with them. They they bite into it. They love it. And in addition, I kind of – when I stick to more heel work, I kind of just stick to being kind of an a-hole or kind of taking the CM Punk route where I see myself as, because I'm more educated on these things, I'm better than you. So I steered away from less of my race and my stance being booed and more so my arrogance being booed. That's how I try to play the heel side. In terms of babyface, I kind of, you know, people just resonate with I guess the whole representation thing and knowing, you know, where I've come from and knowing the past. Like I said, I try to use my work to educate almost in a way. Even though it is escapism and it is fun, and I like to, you know, of course I like wrestling just as much as anyone else. I like to use these things as almost gateways. So, you know, my hopes are someone hears the Asada driver and they think, oh, well, that sounds Japanese, let me look up. And then they find out who Asada Shakur is, and then there you go, now they learn about that. I have a t-shirt design that has a bunch of list of names. You know, it says a bunch of revolutionaries. It's kind of like the and t-shirts. You know how they have like those Beatles t-shirts, but it goes John and Paul and, you know, whatever. Yeah, I have that. So it's more like, you know, Carmichael and Hampton and Asada and Baynard, you know, Fred Baynard Rustin and Lockhart at the end. So a lot of people will see that shirt and they ask me who these people are. And then that opens up a discourse or a conversation. And then now they know things they didn't know before about, you know, people who have definitely paved the way for a lot of us, and, you know, made the world a more progressive place. Awesome. So I try to, you know, placate it with that. Yeah.
So you mentioned education, and I want to talk about your time at UNCG. My wife is a Duke alum, and so she's declared that UNCG is like safe harbor in the war between Tobacco Road. But I was really intrigued because my day job, I do career development and I help students get placed in jobs at my school at Pittsburgh. And so I was really intrigued you living what you learned in terms of not only did you get your degree, but then you used your study abroad opportunity as an internship into the British style. So that was So can you talk a little bit about that and what you took away from it?
Which aspect, the overseas or the British style, or?
Yeah, let's start with education in general, because I know, and then we can jump into the British stuff.
Right, okay. Well, education, it was always something I kind of was just expected of me, the way I was just raised. It was kind of like, you know, well, you're going to college. it was just expected of me. I made a plan at 15 years old that what I would do is I would train in high school or after high school and do the indies throughout college. That was my plan, and that's exactly what I did. I said when I was 14 or 15. And so college was always, you know, a necessity for me. Education is very important in my family. I had an uncle who was 92 and went back and got a degree. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, it's always just been implemented. So when I went to UNCG and I started to, I became involved in a learning community called Embark, which was men begin achieving results collectively. And it was required to take an African American studies course, at least one. And so I took a basic one-on-one, and that I had a professor named Dr. Norris Woods who made a huge impact on me. And I enjoyed the class so much. that I just began to just start picking up more classes to the point where I realized I classified for a major or minor. So I was like, you know, sign me up. I'm going to keep learning about it. And and what a time to start learning about that kind of stuff, because especially with all the things that have been going on the past few years, along with the BLM movement and all the shootings and recent, deaths, it kind of caused me to get an emotional response that tied in with, my newfound education of, African-American studies. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of became a bigger part of me, learning about who I am and who my culture, what my culture is and everything like that. It became a big part of me. So I decided, once I kind of steered away to England and kind of took some time to myself, I kind of realized the best things about wrestlers are, we take that little bit of ourselves, a really important aspect of ourselves, and amplify it times 10. And I realized that was a huge part of me that wasn't leaving anytime soon, that I was more comfortable with than ever. And it was something I cared about. And so that tied in with my communications degree. I knew I was trying to figure out ways how to communicate that with audiences. So it was just the perfect storm. And I just kind of implemented it that way and just used it for my character, which is not really a character, it's just me. Mm-hmm. And so I decided just to vocalize that more. So education was a huge part of my journey to where I am right now. I have nothing but good things to say about UNCG.
Awesome.
I'm Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and former host here at PW Torch Livecast. If you're looking for my shows, they have moved as of July 2017. They're now called the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, available through Podcast One. Enter Wade Keller on your podcast app or iTunes and subscribe to the new Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, where I cover Raw and my first show of the week, SmackDown with my second show of the week, and then the Flagship Edition with a co-host, and we cover a broad array of pro wrestling current events. And then I end the week with a weekly interview. That's the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, now at Podcast One. Subscribe today. Just search Wade Keller.
And then what about your time in the UK? I saw with your study abroad, I saw mentioned in the one interview, Rise, as well as, let me make sure I got here, Kamikaze Pro. And you mentioned a host of people that you had a chance to kind of either learn under or observe and learn from. And what would you think of the best things you picked up from that experience?
The best things, like I said, like learning from different people. I was around Marty Jones all the time, and that was like my second George South. He was teaching me, it's more of the chain wrestling. Like people would work with him, people like him and Dave Taylor, Johnny Kidd, Johnny Saint. Those guys taught me the more technical aspect, which I came over there to learn. But sometimes it was more of the younger guys who were able to take what I've learned and update it. Mm-hmm. and let me understand what was going on and what I needed to be doing now to get noticed. Such as Tommaso Ciampa, he did a seminar for Progress, which I attended, and some of the things he was just saying about things making sense or bringing a different element to your performance, or things that the Federation looks for, the WWE looks for, that was really something I took away from it all. So along with the chain wrestling skills, it also was where to put them, when to put them, and how to make them make sense. That was a huge component of everything while I was over there.
Awesome. And that leads me off to two questions. I'm going to start with the first. You mentioned George South, and I'd be remiss without giving you an opportunity to talk about him, his role in your training, and anyone else in the beginnings of your career as far as getting the ball rolling.
Right. So George South was, my trainer. He taught me from the ground up. He had a school in Charlotte, North Carolina, which he still does. He still teaches every Tuesday nights at High Spots Wrestling School. And George was just one of those guys. He, if anyone's unfamiliar with him, he was a guy who was more of an enhancement talent throughout, the 80s and 90s, whatever. And he's still going today. One of the best to ever do it. Kept a career, bought three houses off of his career. So, he was always smart with money, always knew where to go. And he was deemed one of the best because he knew how to make everyone look good. Ric Flair always, kind of states George is one of his favorite opponents. And there's a reason for that, because George knows exactly what he's doing. I couldn't have asked for a better teacher. George taught me from the ground up and gave me a lot of first opportunities. Along with George was his star student at the time, was Cedric Alexander. And he was more so more of a big brother to me and a secondary trainer, really. I learned so much from Cedric. Cedric and I have a long history. It's pretty funny. I've mentioned this before, but I remember seeing him, I think, in his first or second match for Ring of Honor, and it was in Charlotte. And I remember thinking it was cool to see, you know, A, someone who looks like me once again, and B, the guy from Charlotte. So I thought that was awesome. A year later, I'll see him in the gym, and I meet him, tell him I'm a fan, you know, say what's up and everything. And I just kind of thought it was awesome to see him. A year later, I go to High Spots, and it's my first day, and he recognizes me from when we first met. Because that, and also I've been attending PWX shows for about a couple months at that point. Well, actually a while at that point. But he recognized me off jump. And from there, he kind of just took me under his wing and kind of deemed me his little brother. And from then on, like a year later, once again, these years apart, he was my first match. And from then on, we've had some great matches together. And he's always been, you know, willing to help me and take me under his wing. So I'm blessed to have both of those men in my life, George South and Cedric Alexander, as well as Caleb Conley. Caleb Conley was a huge part. Former tag member of mine before that, he was definitely a mentor. He also runs training at High Spots Wednesday nights, and he taught me so many things about timing and pacing and where to put things as well. So those three men I can credit a lot to, along with people like Marty Jones. Yeah.
And speaking of Cedric, the one thing I thought that was really cool, I wasn't sure if you had even thought about this yet, is the full circle you have, where you have this big brother relationship, you train under him, you work with him, and now you're tagging with one of his former tag team partners in Caprice Coleman. Can you talk a little bit about your tag team and the significance of Caprice's gear being a real fit with what you're trying to do as a Revolutionary separately, and now how you guys come together?
Well, Caprice has also been a guy who's just been around throughout my career. We met maybe about a year into my training, and he kind of took a liking to me from Jump Street. So he's always been a guy who's had my back or looked out for me or tried to give me opportunities. And he had started to do the thing in Ring of Honor with the Rebellion. Mm-hmm. And they kind of it was kind of not as much as what I was doing. It was more of just a general rebellion. But I remember they took some of the aspects of their of their outfits and what they wore from other revolutionary movements, you know, with the military gear and the militant look. And it was the perfect storm, really. Caprice just happened to be done with the Rebellion. I just finished up with my own group, The Revolt. I was solo, he was solo. And I think he was just thinking one day, he gave me a call and asked me, you know, what I thought about tag teaming up. And it just seemed like I didn't think twice about it. I was like, that makes perfect sense. Why wouldn't we? You know, we have a general chemistry behind the scenes, and he was doing something that could easily tie into what I am. So we decided to just take the ball running, and I think we're starting something that's going to be really special for both of us, a really good chapter in our career.
Yeah. Awesome. Oh, hold on one second. Someone's calling my hotel room.
No issue.
I'll get my wife later about that. Okay, so when it comes to the Revolt, before I move on a little bit to your tag team, I do want to talk a little bit about the Revolt. How did you guys form it, and what was the reasoning behind assembling the stable or faction?
I think it was one of those things where what I was doing was fresh, kind of. I was, you know, the Revolutionary, and they had started the Revolt, and I feel like they got into a place in terms of booking where it needed something new to it. You know what I'm saying? Like they had done this whole feud with the Experience, and after the Experience had disbanded, they were kind of just, you know, around. And even though they were getting the crowd reaction, they needed something, some life into it, I think. And so they just thought it would be a decent addition. And I think we tried it out. We did the addition after. I think we did Double Swerve with like Mason Maddox at the time, who was wrestling PWX, was going to turn and join them, and we did a little Double Swerve, and I ended up joining them. From then on, I think my time there, I learned a lot about who I am and who I need to be as a performer, and especially behind the scenes and what I need to learn and how to, dictate, or, you know, trying to find the right words.
Mm-hmm.
How to I don't want to say work the system, but I learned a lot about, you know, what I needed to be as a wrestler backstage in and out of the ring from with Caleb, working with Caleb and Zane. And that was a really important lesson that I think I had to learn in that environment to come out better for, if that makes sense.
Oh, no, it does.
Yeah.
And
so the good.
Oh, no. I was going to say, and given that, especially you're like 20, 21,
mm-hmm.
how difficult was it even then? Because I'm assuming at that point you're like 19, 20, navigating these waters and going to school and having to deal with life outside of, you know, your dream job. So how hard was it to navigate those waters and kind of those life skills that you're picking up at the same time?
It was extremely difficult. Each day was a test, really. There was a lot of times where I wasn't sure. If I was going to be able to do it. But, you know, I kind of sucked it up and kept moving. But there was a lot of times where I was almost, I want to say held back, but I fell short of opportunities because I wasn't, you know, able to give all my time to wrestling, you know? Mm-hmm. There were times where it would be like, you know, oh, I could have got this opportunity. I could have been here. You know, I could have wrestled on this show if I'd been there, but I couldn't because I had, you know, either the exam the next day or I didn't have a ride there or something along those lines. So learning that, I think in a way, I think I might have been stagnant for some time. It was almost like I was handcuffed because I could only do so much, but I did try to do the most of what I could with the time I was given. I guess with going back and forth, between, I guess, college and wrestling, you're learning 24/7. So that was the benefit of it, I guess. It wasn't always a negative aspect, but it was definitely a learning curve that I had to learn pretty early that became more challenging the more the years went on. Mm-hmm.
And having guys like Cedric and Caprice to kind of call and bounce things off of or kind of check, hey, is this the right way? Is this the right thing to say? Is this the right thing to do? Has been helpful.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. As much as I'm getting better at that now,
okay,
because for a while I'm a kind of a prideful person, mm-hmm. so for a lot of times I didn't like asking people for things, or I'd rather just learn from experience or learn by just hearing things naturally rather than, you know, I asked questions at the right time, but sometimes I just needed, you know, a couple of mentors for that. So Cedric or Caprice or even like an Ethan Case would be helful in that. There were a lot of people over the years who've had my back, definitely. But it was a blessing to have them. I'll leave it at that for sure.
Awesome. And looking at you guys, you and Caprice, it reminds me a lot of Trent Seven and Tyler Bate over in the UK, where you have a younger wrestler who has a style, a hard-hitting style, and then the older wrestler who's very cagey, very dynamic, had the pelts on the wall. How do you guys work together to kind of create, you know, a tag team magic where it isn't just, because I saw the animated GIF and I saw the CWF Worldwide episode where you guys won the number one contendership, and mm-hmm. I definitely have some questions about that because my wrestling nerd brain set off with this question: if you guys win the CWF Mid-Atlantic tag team titles, what are you going to do about the South Carolina flag that's on the belt?
Man, you're my man. See, this is why I like this interview, because this is exactly, you read my mind here. Me and Caprice, first of all, I like the Tyler Bate and Trent Seven comparison. That I never heard that before. I never thought about it, so that's pretty awesome. And those are two opponents we would love to have, so I'm sure. But me and Caprice bounce ideas off each other all the time. He's always texting me like, hey, what if we do this? Or, hey, what if we do that? He's down in Charlotte now full-time, so he trains at High Spots with us on Wednesdays now. And so we're always practicing things and adding new moves. And we've got a lot of more moves and a lot of more, chemistry that we're still building. Mm-hmm. And a lot of things people haven't seen from us. So this is going to be definitely a fun ride for people who have only seen that match. In terms of if we win the belts, I've talked to Brad Stutz about this a long time ago, back through my first run with CWF. I told him if I ever want a belt there, the flags probably will have to go. And the addition, the way we're going to do that, we're still trying to figure that out. I have a few ideas, but it's definitely not something I'm willing I want the championships and lineage that comes with it, but in terms of the Confederate flag around my waist, I'm not really happy with that. So we're just going to have to find some tweaks, find some way around that for sure.
One of the things when I was prepping for this, I was talking with Bruce about this, and he was just saying, hey, just ask good questions and you guys have a conversation. And that was the first one that came to my mind. And because I thought, it was like, if I were in your shoes, I would either have a revolutionary sticker that you could put over it, or man, a Black Lives Matter or something that
you can't be giving away my ideas, man.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
These are all like everything you're saying. I've thought about it. I'm like, man, like this guy, if he keeps doing it, he's going to spoil the results.
I'm sorry. No, guys can redact, pay no attention. I even went so far, man. I was in Wikipedia researching South Carolinian revolutionaries that could, like a different face for each state.
Yeah.
So I went in. I told you when I dive deep into these things.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, same. We're two of the same kind there.
Now, when it comes to, we talked about a lot about your tag time, a lot about your development, but going forward in your future, you mentioned the WWE. Is that a long term goal?
It's a long term goal. Someone I definitely want to be, but I am not upset if I'm not there. Right away, you know what I mean. If it's a few years, if it's a couple years off, I'm fine with that. But it's definitely a goal. It's an aspiration. One day, I think I don't know anyone who wouldn't want to be there. I think right now it would be an interesting time to get picked up because they have so many guys up there. Mm-hmm. But you know, I'm one of those people who believe you may not always be where you want to be, but you're always where you need to be. So within the right time, I'll get there when I need to be there. Yeah.
Now, have you looked at some of the older wrestlers? Like, for instance, this Saturday, I'm not quite sure when we're going to put this interview out because of the schedule, but this Saturday I'm doing an interview with the Big Cat Ernie Ladd. Or not interview, because he's passed. I'm doing a deep dive on Ernie Ladd and talking about how he helped mastermind the AFL boycott of New Orleans for their All-Star game because the Civil Rights Act of 64 had just passed and they were playing James Brown in the clubs, but they wouldn't let any of the black players in. And he went into wrestling mainly because he made more money there than he did playing professional football. And so Ernie had a lot of issues where he was a big talker, he was an awesome wrestler, but he said a lot of things. Like he would bring up a lot of, like, this dude needs to go back to Africa. This guy don't get along with me, and he knows why. Like, kind of pulling the red bone card, kind of saying things. So for his time, these were some crazy things to be saying that people kind of didn't hear. But now with you as a revolutionary, I feel like if you were on a national stage, you could talk about things in a way that won't get the non-politically interested fan at home to not turn the television. So have you thought about, like, that next step, how you can make, I know you mentioned earlier you're flexible, how you can make the revolutionary go national without, say, like, I'll even mention in the WWE right now, I think what you were mentioning about how you focus on the arrogance instead of the race of the character could go a long way with someone like Jinder Mahal, who I'm pulling for as a brown wrestler that's trying to find his way. With him, though, every promo ends with, you hate me because I'm Indian, you hate me because I'm brown. It's like, well, let's see a little bit more. So have you thought about, like, those, or do you have examples of people you've looked to? You mentioned CM Punk. That could kind of help in that development.
Yeah, CM Punk is a person I was a fan of coming up, and I didn't realize how similar we really were until I started, you know, engaging with this, I don't want to say act, but engaging this part of myself. It's definitely a line that I'm still learning how to tiptoe on. I don't want to neuter it, or I don't want to censor myself. However, I do know that there's a way to say things rather than just, you know, outright, you know, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm still trying to figure that out and what I'm going to say, how I'm going to say it. But, I definitely don't want to, do anything that would, cost me my career or make fans uncomfortable, because at the end of the day, our thing is to entertain. You know what I mean? I'm not you know, going to assimilate or, like, you know, censor myself for feelings, but I know that there's a time and place for a certain rhetoric that might there might be like, I don't want to go out of my way to say certain things that don't need to be said. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just because it's my character. I know a lot of people, when I first started doing this, people would contact me and say, and with that different ideas. And some people even suggested that I tackle, like, you know, play around, not ever say, but play around with the uses of the N-word. And I'm like, that's just going out of my way to just get controversy. Like, that's not what I want to do. That's not my goal here. You know what I'm saying? My goal, being a revolutionary is, to me, means a lot of things, but one of them is primarily is just to exist or to thrive in a place that was not meant for you to thrive, to just keep doing what you want to do and to do it proudly, profoundly, so people like you can see that and they want to be it too, and they realize they can do it. I want to empower people, you know, of all races. So I don't want to ever go out of my way to isolate or, you know, or pigeonhole myself into one little, you know, act. So that's a major thing I don't want to do when going forward in my career. In terms of WWE, I want to keep that, I guess, that form of empowerment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Especially for children. Mm-hmm. I remember going to an AML show and one of the best reactions I ever got were after my match, I was at my merch table, and two little black boys came up to me, raised their fists in the air, and screamed like "Black Lives Matter" with the biggest smile on their face. And then we took a picture after, and that was one of the best things. And that's what I do this for. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
To give children that pride and to not know and not have to think, well, you know, I'm at disadvantage because of my skin, but to know that you are just as good. And just as powerful with your skin, or you know, and that is not a crutch. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. So for sure, that it's never my goal to just make headlines or tell anyone to go back to Africa. That's definitely not in my agenda. That's definitely some gross rhetoric. But that's basically why I want to. I kind of just want to play that line and find a way to make everyone comfortable, but educate everyone as well. And to feel empowered, you know.
Mm-hmm. Don't just listen to PW Torch's brand of wrestling coverage. Read it too, every day at pwtorch.com. Join me Monday nights for my live coverage of Raw, Tuesday nights for my live coverage of SmackDown, Sunday nights for my live coverage of WWE pay-per-views, and keep up on the news and read exclusive editorials and special features every day at pwtorch.com.
And I don't know if you've thought about this or maybe even talked to some of the more veteran wrestlers you've worked with, but how do you think you're going to handle down the road ignorance on the part of some of your coworkers? I mean, we've talked about the fans, but at the time over the years, you know, especially for me as a person of color, whenever I would read The Torch or read The Observer and read the stories of, you know, my favorite wrestler growing up was Bad News Brown. And when I heard Andre the Giant called him the N-word, and he basically stepped to Andre and said, we had to handle this, that was probably one of the coolest things I ever read when I was like 13 or 14. Because I was like, oh, man, that Bad News, if Bad News wouldn't take that, I'm not going to take that. And so how do you think about that? And then also like the waters you're going into, because it could be someone that could have it in for you down the road with your career or, you know, how do you balance being unapologetically black with being aware of some of the pitfalls that may be in the profession you're undertaking in?
I think that I've already dealt with that.
Okay.
I'm not to say I won't continue to keep dealing with it, but I've definitely am already dealing with that now in terms of either people who don't get it, people who don't like what I stand for, people who do have it out for me or whatever like that. I've dealt with it, and there's no need to name names or list anything off, but I try to first of all, you know, I try to go high when they go low. That's the obvious thing. But I try to be patient with people. No, it's not my job to teach, but sometimes a conversation can fix things. I used to, you know, take a lot of crap, or I used to, you know, let jokes just slide off and ignore them because I know, hey, don't mess your money up, you know. But eventually, it does. You want, you know, you shouldn't have to apologize. It should be unapologetically black. So now I'm more than willing to say if I have a problem with something or if it bothers me, and I'm willing to have that conversation with people. I definitely, you do have to approach it a certain way, because at the end of the day, I'm still a professional. Mm-hmm. I'm not gonna step outside with you if I don't have to step outside with you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I don't have to step outside with you. We can talk this way, or we can agree to disagree and move on. You can be willfully ignorant if you want. I'm sorry that you feel that way, but that's just what you have to do. You know what I mean? So, a lot of the times I let people just do their own thing. I don't try to educate everyone in the locker room. Like I said, that's not my job. But if it comes to it, I'm more than willing to have that conversation. In terms of people, you know, trying to tear me down, my work speaks for itself. You know, at the end of the day, I feel like, they say cream rises to the top, whatever like that. And, I do believe in karma. So I'm just going to keep doing my thing. I'm going to stay positive, keep my head forward. I know what I bring to the table. I know that the fans react to me. I know what my worth is. So I'm never going to let anything like that deter me from what I need to be doing, or what I'm capable of doing.
Awesome. Now, I know nowadays, you know, in addition to my all this stuff, I'm a football fan. I coach for a high school team. And I work primarily with, like, farm kids in northwestern Pennsylvania. So I have some kids of color, but a lot of it's me being that person they can ask questions in a safe environment to.
Yeah.
How do you handle things like let's say what's going on right now with Colin Kaepernick, and in terms of the language you would use in, say, a promo, or even in considering mentioning it? Or is that more that balance you try to think about?
So could you restate that question one more time?
Sure. So, like, something like what's going on with Colin Kaepernick, or I was reading a few days ago, Brandon Mebane of the Chargers was talking about when they moved to L.A., no one wanted to rent to them because they were saying millionaires. You know, we had this, this next person had a 4 credit points higher, and you're talking to a man that's a millionaire.
Yeah.
Like, he's, you know, sprinkling 2 nickels together to try to rent your apartment. So do you bring those things into your promos? Do you think about them when you're kind of discussing what you guys want to do, or do you even leave that completely off the table?
I say it without saying it.
Mm-hmm.
I try to do it in a classy way. Like when addressing the Colin Kaepernick thing, believe it or not, I've done that in my own way.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I did an entrance one time at PWX where I came out with tape on my forehead and my mouth. Don't think, don't talk.
Yeah, that's right.
It was kind of, that was my statement on, you know, Colin Kaepernick's situation and how, you know, we're only limited with the, you know, we're good as long as we're just wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't want us to think, they don't want us to talk, they just want us to do our job. And you can see that in people on Twitter. You can look at John Legend's mentions whenever he tweets anything political. Stick to music, mm-hmm. you know, whenever Colin Kaepernick tweets, take the football. So, I mean, that was my statement on that. I try to make statements without, you know, heating the table,
mm-hmm.
but those that I wanted to be eye opener. I want people to ask questions. Well, what does that mean? And then, like I said earlier, it creates a discourse and it starts a conversation, or it just opens eyes blatantly to see, because a lot of people didn't get it until I did. I know some people who said they didn't really see it until I did that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And even though it was something subtle, it's still, you know, enough for me. So I try to that's me walking that line. Whether it be in my promos or in what I wear or what I do or what I say or how I come out. I remember that, you know, in terms of respectability politics, like there was that one time, I mean, I'll come to the ring with a pick in my hair. I don't care. You know what I'm saying? When it comes to not receiving the proper opportunities, you know, I addressed that in a recent promo I just cut. I did an AML one time when I was wrestling Jason Cade, the promo going into that, you know, I addressed having to work twice as hard to be considered half as good.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So, and that's something else I'm going to pick up later on when the time is right. But I just try to say it without saying it. And those that get it, get it. Those that don't, think about it. And then hopefully they get it later.
So. Awesome. All right, so I got 3 more, and then we'll be good to go. I wanted to talk about your arch nemesis, if you have one. I saw a lot of Smith Garrett, and I actually wanted to read a review to you that I read after I'd seen, I think it was the there was episode 1 and then episode 100.
Mm-hmm.
this person wrote, this is a rematch from episode 100 of CWF, episode 1 of CWF Worldwide, and was a spirited little affair. First time I've seen Lockhart, I'm a little uncomfortable with a heel wearing Black Lives Matter trunks, especially in the South, against a white power looking baby face like Smith Garrett. Troublesome politics aside, the match was hard hitting and fun. Lockhart really laid it in. Garrett is a fun brawler, and I especially like Lockhart's stomps in the corner, felt like he was going to crack a rib. So I laughed out loud when I saw this because I hadn't even thought about it. And
no, me either.
I don't know CWF Mid-Atlantic well enough yet to know Smith Garrett's like entire character, but I know, for instance, like the biker guys you guys are going to be wrestling for the tag titles look like they could be in the cast of Sons of Anarchy. So having two black guys versus the two Sons of Anarchy guys, that's a natural like kind of like friction there. But tell me a little bit about Smith Garrett or anyone else you have that you would see as an arch nemesis.
I think I have about maybe 3 to 4 arch nemesis in this. But Smith Garrett, I'll focus on that guy is someone I have a lot of chemistry with. It's just natural. Smith Garrett is in no means white power. In fact, you know, before we butted heads, we trained together at High Spots, and he was a very good friend of mine. He's a talented guy. We have the natural chemistry. We have maybe about 4, 5, 6 matches together. Mm-hmm. And I think each one is better than the last in a certain type of way, in different ways. You know what I'm saying? Whether it be in the storytelling aspect or a performance aspect or, you know, athleticism. I think so. I'm really proud of that, of my work with him. Hopefully he has bright things coming ahead. In terms of other arch nemesis, quote unquote, Tracer X has been a big one recently. We recently did a lot of work back and forth over the past year and a half, and once I said we also have a natural chemistry. That guy is super talented. We didn't have much interaction beforehand, but throughout this feud, we kind of have a general respect for each other now, and that's someone I can definitely. I think we've grown to the point where I can. He's someone I can definitely trust in this business. I have his back, and he has mine. So if you haven't checked out any of me and Tracer X's matches, please do. I think we've had a lot of fun. We have a lot of good matches in there. Chris Lee, who I think is going to be returning soon, I'm not sure. He was one of the first people I ever had a good match against. You know what I mean? When you're first starting out, you know, if you have a good match, it's usually because your opponent, or if, you know, your opponent carried you, or you usually don't have good matches your first 20 matches. But Chris was the first person I had a match and people were like, oh, wait, like, this kid's good. I think he gets it. And so Chris Lee was another one that we have an undeniable chemistry in and out of the ring. That's honestly one of my best friends in wrestling, if not my best friend in wrestling. And my fourth one has to be Cedric Alexander. I mean, that's big brother, but I've had some of my best matches against him, recorded and non-recorded. I think the funniest thing is our best match we've ever had was about 20 to 30 minutes at some kid's birthday party in his backyard.
Oh, wow.
And it was legit a month before during the Cruiserweight Classic. And Cedric's wrestling in this kid's backyard. Not recorded. No one recorded. But it was a locker room full of people. It was this. First of all, let me just go into this real quick. This kid was spoiled as hell. it was a favorite for George South. And in his backyard, he had me, Cedric Alexander, the Ugly Ducklings, Timmy Louretten, White Mike, High Profile, James Ryan, who's like one half of the Culture over at AML with Cam Carter. I mean, and he had the Power, who is going to be, this is a tag team out of North Carolina, who's going to be a huge player if they keep going. He had like a who's who of North Carolina wrestling in his backyard. And this kid, he didn't know how lucky he was. But anyway, so me and Cedric legit went 20, 25, 30 minutes on the fly in this kid's backyard and had one of my best matches ever. And no one will ever see it. But that's just what me and Cedric have. So hopefully we get to tie up again soon. Not has to be soon, but hopefully we can tie up again one day. And we can show the world what we can do.
Awesome.
But those are my definitely probably my top four.
Awesome. Now, looking at everything you've done and everything we've talked about today, the one thing I didn't talk about yet is one of my personal favorites and one of the reasons I started this show. I love UK wrestling, and I have been in love since like my sophomore year with Japanese wrestling. Do you have any aspirations there? And if so, who are some people you would like to wrestle?
Yes. Well, first of all, I'm trying to go back to Europe, to England, as soon as possible. that was the reason why I even went to England, because I had been a fan for a while. Mm-hmm. I remember I was a big Doug Williams fan. He was a big inspiration for me.
Yes.
And huge Doug Williams. And that's how actually I found Progress really early on, like before it blew up.
Mm-hmm.
I discovered Progress around chapter 10 or 13 because Doug Williams was a part of the roster. I Googled Doug Williams stuff to see what he'd been doing lately, and it led me to that. So Progress and Doug was my entryway at around like 2012, 2013 into British wrestling, heavy British wrestling, and I fell in love with it, obviously. So I tried to go back. I'm trying to go back soon. I went over there and learned as much as I could from those guys with those style. So Doug Williams is a definitely a person I want to tie up with. That's like a dream match for me. Zach Gibson is someone I definitely want to get in the ring with. He reminds me of Nigel McGuinness in a lot of particular ways. I think he's really overlooked.
Liverpool's number one.
Liverpool's number one, man. I think he generally is. But he really is. I want to get back in there with Saxon Huxley. Me and him have a fun chemistry. He was in WWE's UK tournament. He's doing great things right now as the Rise champion. The list just goes on and on. Give me all the UK guys, man. All the UK guys. Like Nathan Cruz, I want that match. I want a lot of matches. I just want to go over there and see what I can do and really work these guys and show people how much I've improved. In terms of Japan, who doesn't want to go to Japan as a wrestler?
Right.
The respect they give you over there. I just had a friend, Big Bang Ryan Nicole, shout out to her, an amazing talent who does not get nearly enough recognition or enough opportunities while here. She just came back from Japan and murdered her tour. She's awesome. She just told me about the respect that they have over there for people, and it really hit home for her to the point where she now calls that her home. Like, she loves Japan that much. And I want to have the opportunity to have that. In terms of opponents over there, I kind of really want to rampage through the indies and see what's up over there. I want to check out Dragon Gate and see if it was popping. I was a big SEMA fan for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to see if I could even keep up or anything. That'd be kind of cool.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
In terms of like the bigger names, like New Japan, like who doesn't want to wrestle Ibushi?
Yeah.
Who doesn't want to, test their might against some of New Japan's finest? I could go all day about New Japan, but I guess Ibushi would be a big one. Who does I watch the other night? Saber, I guess he does Japan and England. I definitely want to wrestle Saber.
Now, it's funny, Darius. The more I hear you, I had written down here the number one person in my Darius Lockhart dream match would be Tetsuya Naito. And
yeah,
the reason why is you both do the Revolutionary Fist, and mm-hmm. most people just see it for him doing something cool. But again, mm-hmm. here comes the wrestling nerd in me. When he did his excursion, he went to Mexico, and a lot of the Mexicans who were fans, they had their hearts in the right place, but they were a little ignorant because as an Asian man, they would tell him to open his eyes, and they would
mm-hmm. do
the thing. And that's why he does the eye move, because mm-hmm. it's a constant like, no, you can see
yeah.
me.
Yeah,
and so it's just like what you're talking about. If you know, mm-hmm. you know, and if
yep.
you don't, you'll learn.
Exactly.
And so I think you two would have a really good match. And
I would love that.
Yeah. I think the idea of excursion, I think that's kind of what you did when you went to the UK the first time. I mean, I feel like you picked up your game afterward. You're a lot more not vicious, I guess is the word, but it was you had that alpha mentality. Mm-hmm. Like once you were on a guy, you were that was it. I'm finishing this off. And
yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing how things go with you and Caprice in that regard and how you guys kind of fight through with CWF. Now, I mentioned CWF Mid-Atlantic. Where else do you wrestle?
I wrestle for PWX Wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to be in different places every weekend. I was up at West Virginia Championship Wrestling for a while. I think I'm going back there soon. AMO Wrestling is a place you can catch me at. Generally from there, I'm really just trying to go to different places. I think those are the only places I kind of like routinely go.
Mm-hmm.
Everywhere else, I'm just kind of like just trying to learn, get in cars and go to vehicles. There's a lot of stuff in the works that I'm trying to get in right now. I'm not going to speak on it, but yeah. Hopefully you'll be seeing me a lot more places regularly soon. So we're going to get it. Yeah.
Awesome. And I wanted to close up shop by asking you about PPG Sierra and how you got involved in that group and what it means to you.
But one more time?
PPG Sierra.
Oh, which is...
It was something I saw when I was looking in your work. It was like a community-based... I think it was on your Instagram. It was...
Oh. You're talking about the Sierra Club?
Yeah.
There you go. Oh, yeah, the Sierra Club. That actually stemmed from a group project from my communications course. We were I was taking a group communications course, and we were learning about, how groups operate. And so we were to study a group and work with them and find out the foundations of groups and how they work and what their chemistry was. And throughout that, I found something that I thought was needed more attention. It was a breath of fresh air, and it was something I would love to help out with, especially they're trying to expand with youth. So if anyone is interested in environmental issues, please contact the Sierra Club. You can find them online just by Googling. They have different branches all over the U.S. But if you're in North Carolina, they have one in Greensboro that you should definitely check out. Definitely help sponsor. Definitely give your money to. It's definitely something that you can work with. Thank you. No one really asked about that, so I appreciate that. Shout out to them and Sierra Club.
Oh, no problem, man. Yeah. I would be remiss if I didn't ask this one. Do you have a favorite match, and if so, what is it?
Man, I'm too indecisive. I'm a Libra, so I'm really indecisive. Favorite match? I have favorite matches.
Okay.
I think.
What about three? What are the first three matches that pop into your head that you, if you want to sit down and watch a match, like I can watch this all day.
Of mine?
Of yours or anyone else's? Like if you're looking to learn, if you're looking to just enjoy wrestling.
Oh, okay, like that. Okay, yeah. If I'm looking to learn general favorite matches, this one's not like a groundbreaking one by any means, but it was awesome. Samoa Joe versus Doug Williams from, I think it was a Ring of Honor show from 2005. I looked at it for two different reasons. I love Samoa Joe's hard-hitting style. He was also a big influence on me. And Doug Williams, you know, technical skills were a huge influence on me. So it's like two styles I like clashing, mm-hmm. Clashing against one another. So that's one of them that I love to watch. Jeez, man, there's so many matches out there that I really do enjoy. I hate to show favoritism or anything. I can better off name matches I've enjoyed more recently that really stuck out to me. I enjoyed Kota Ibushi versus Zack Sabre Jr. That was really good. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed that. Akira Tozawa versus Jack Gallagher from the Cruiserweight Classic last year. I felt like that was everything wrestling's supposed to be. I know those are all newer matches, but those are just what pops in my head recently.
No, that's fine.
As anomalies is what I love. Everything I love about wrestling combined into it. And all of them happen to be like strikers versus technical wrestlers, I just realized. But those are just stuff that I'm definitely into. So if you guys haven't checked that out, if you haven't seen those matches, please watch those. They're pretty fantastic, yeah.
And I would be, you know, I'm going to say I would be remiss for like the eighth time in this interview, but I would definitely recommend, since you're going to be indecisive, I would recommend if anyone gets a chance, and I'll put this in the notes for the show when I put this episode up, Darius versus Keith Lee. I'm speaking things into existence.
Oh, please. Yeah, I would love to wrestle Keith Lee.
Darius versus Trevor.
Lee. Me versus Trevor Lee is a big one. People love that match, yeah.
Yeah, that was, I mean, from the beginning of it with your argument with Smith to getting into the match itself and his kind of, like, you being the young wily wrestler and Trevor being the, he's not being a jerk, but he's trying to knock you down a peg or two. And it's a good combination. It was as good. I really enjoyed watching the match with you and Cedric as well from CWF. But I really liked that Trevor Lee match because I just felt like you were constantly having to prove yourself in that match. Whereas with Cedric, especially given what you've told us today, it was more like two brothers scrapping and you're just kind of trying to prove to your – and it's another chance to prove something, I guess. You're kind of proving to your older brother, hey, I can make this shot too.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Yeah. I had a lot to prove against Cedric in that. Is it okay if I speak on that?
Absolutely, go right ahead.
I love Cedric, and I had a lot to prove. That was our first time wrestling, I think, since I had gotten back from England. So, and even though he had seen me in England, he happened to be on tour over there while I was in England. So we ended up bonding that way. But it was the first time wrestling since I had been back. So I had a lot to prove to myself, or like, you know, oh, I want to impress Seth and show him how much better I've gotten. That match is me trying to keep up with Cedric. That's exactly what it is. But it's also me knowing that my time with him is very limited at that point. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I wanted to give it my all. And so that one combined with the 30-minute one we had in that kid's backyard was just two things that I definitely hold near and dear to my heart. The Trevor Lee, what you saw was exactly what it was. It was just, you know, it's weird because I think I had seen myself. Trevor was one of those guys at the time I looked up to him. I thought for sure that was, you know, who I wanted to be as a wrestler. And so it was weird because it was almost I was in the same place he was at that time in his career, where I remember Trevor being 18, 19, and him feeling like he always, you know, constantly had to prove himself. He was always, you know, big upping the older guys, you know, wrestling with some of the older roster members and proving that, hey, this kid's going to be the man one day. Trevor, I mean, that's kind of where I saw his journey. And so I kind of approached that match with, hey, I'm where Trevor was 2-3 years ago, so let me bring that same kind of energy. And what happened was just... it was just a moment that I think that's the best way to describe it. It was definitely a match that people still come up to me and talk to me about. So, and it was the first time I was able to really tap into that aggressive side, that vicious side of me. Beforehand, I had a little bit of issue with that. And not that it was deterring from my work or distracting, but it was one of those things where that was the moment where I was like, I know how to turn this on and off now. Like, it's a switch now. And so I got to give Trevor credit for that, for sure, for bringing that that aggressiveness out of me.
Awesome. And thank you so much for your time, Darius. Where can fans find you again on social media? And are there any shows that are coming up that you'd like us to kind of put out there?
Like I said, you can find me on Instagram at Darius Lockhart. That's just normal, regular. And then on Twitter at DLockPro. You know, by any means, look up my stuff on YouTube. You know, preferably newer stuff. Yeah, there's some matches out there that I was not that great in, but, you know, please don't hold that against me. In terms of more shows, the next few weeks I will be traveling. Me and Caprice do have that tag team title match against the Dawsons August 12th. And I have another title match against Elijah Evans at PWX Wrestling August 20th in Cabarrus County Arena. Every other weekend, basically, right now, are just seminars and traveling and trying to get spots and tryouts on shows. So... I don't think you guys really want to come to that. Hopefully you can see me later on at said shows, but that's all in the works. So, you know, so PWX August 20th is definitely a place you want to catch me at. Big championship match for me. I've never held a championship before in my career. So hopefully one out of these two weekends, I will change that. So, yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for your time and have a great day.
Thank you. You too, sir.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues, and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and SureDog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Killer Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the Ask the Editor format of the Waykiller Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Past Show with scouting reports on prospects, and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in-depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the live cast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip. This is live.